This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 6:30 tonight, LSU baseball as the Tigers play University of Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL. Charlie, did the Tigers announce who's going to be the pitcher in that game?
Let me double-check. I haven't seen anything just yet, but I'll be interested to see what that decision is because Jay's come out and said that William Schmidt is basically done pitching in midweek games for his career at LSU. Maybe it's Connor Ware gets the start. Jaden Newt was the one that got the start last week, so it could be him as well. Let me go double check here, Mike.
Yeah, and at 5:20, Mikey Matuk will be on with us. People remember him from his days at LSU. Also played in the major leagues, and he's the host of Mic'd Up, the podcast, and on YouTube. And you can listen to Mikey there, and also he'll give us his breakdown of the SEC, which is a gauntlet when you take a look at the teams in the Southeast Conference and how they've played. And at 5:40, Gary Smith, publisher of the Wave Report. Also, he covers the Tulane Green Wave for the Times-Picayune New Orleans. And they had Pro Day today at Tulane. And they got a couple guys there, got an opportunity to take it to the next level as a draft choice. And so we'll go over those particular guys with Gary Smith at 5:40.
Nothing yet from LSU baseball, Mike. And I just want to build on our conversation from last hour as well. When we were talking about wide receivers in this draft class, ESPN's got their kind of ranking, NFL draft ranking for the wide receiver position. I think that's kind of interesting, some of these names and where they're kind of placed. Tet McMillan, obviously, number one. We've mentioned him as a potential landing spot with the Saints at pick 9 overall if you want that big body receiver. Number two, they have Matthew Golden from Texas.
I would put him two also.
Okay, so you agree with that. This is where it gets kind of interesting. Jaden Higgins, who I said was, you know, maybe a round two guy that you could potentially target at pick 40 if you don't get Tet McMillan in the first round, they have him ranked number three on this list. I think that's a little bit high.
Okay, have they watched Luther Burden the third place?
This is what's weird to me. Luther Burden's at six on this list, Mike, and Emeka Ebuka at four. I like Ebuka a lot, and I know we've talked about him, and the word that always comes to mind when you watch him is just polish. He's so NFL-ready from Ohio State, but that seems like all these Ohio State receivers, they just come into the NFL ready to play. Trey Harris at number five, and then Luther Burden at number six.
I don't get that at
all.
Who put that list out?
It's this ESPN, man. And so I would probably have Luther Burden a couple spots higher. Same thing with Ebuka. Higgins is probably closer to five or six for me, but at the same time, you know, maybe they don't see as many receivers going in the first round.
Uh, I, from years past, what you don't have is that uppercut. See, Tet is the one guy that I think everybody would say he's going to be a top 15 pick. Now, where exactly he goes, you know, sometimes because there's a run on a position, you get maybe pushed down a spot or two, but he's the one guy I think we'd all agree on. Then you look at Matt Golden. I saw him play. He played University of Houston first.
Yeah.
And then he transferred to Texas. And, man, he has gotten so much better as a route runner, his separation ability. He catches the ball pretty well in traffic, and he's got tremendous foot speed after the catch. But, man, watch Luther Burden III. Oh, my goodness. He is as smooth as could be. He's got outstanding run-after-catch ability. He makes people miss in space. Oh, maybe I'm missing something, but maybe I'm not. This is the season two of agents pushing guys ahead of guys that don't have one thing on the resume: productivity.
Mike, I'll ask you this about a couple of these guys. With Luther Burden, do you see some Malik Nabers in his game? I mean, just as far as the yak capabilities and when he gets the ball in his hands,
Malik was a little thicker guy, faster.
Okay.
A tad quicker.
I like him a lot. And so my question is about Tet McMillan, going back to him, the number one receiver prospect in this class. To your point about the chunks, the last few years, I remember there was like the year with like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Drake London in one draft. And then just this past year, it was the top three guys of Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. If you're talking about Tet McMillan as a prospect, and if he was in last year's draft class, just take him as this year's prospect.
He'd be the four guy.
He'd be the fourth guy. I agree.
He'd be the fourth guy.
I agree.
Again, his uniqueness, one, he's a big player, but he has a skill set to get up in the air and to make a catch where there's a lot of arms and hands and comes down with it. Because of his size, he's never going to be the quickest or the fastest getting into and out of a cut and a break just because he's so big. But, man, he gives you a target. And when the ball's up in the air, he makes a play on it. It doesn't matter if he's bracketed or if he's got double coverage. He's got an innate ability to get that big body up and make the catch. And a lot of times you see guys that are tall, they don't come down with it. With Tet, he comes down with it.
And Tet, one of those underrated things, I remember we were talking with Dalton Wasserman about this, Mike, from the PFF College Football Show. With Tet, he had such impressive numbers after the catch, too, for a big guy. And typically, like, you'll see all these kind of smaller receivers that will put up these crazy numbers and elusive, like, they're elusive. They can, you know, make defenders miss an open space. Tet's 6'4", 215 pounds, and he's putting up these types of numbers where he's just making defenders look silly. So there were the concerns about his quote-unquote separation capabilities at the NFL level. I think he's going to be a really, really solid pro, Mike. And
I think he's going to be more than solid. I think he's going to be a really good NFL player when you have that type of size. Now, the one thing, I saw it early last year with him, that he had a tendency to maybe look up the field. He dropped a couple that were easy catches for him. But that's not that he has bad hands. That's he's looking up the field to try to make a play. And it was on short throws. It was not the intermediate type of things. But, man, Tet McMillan is a really good football player. Right scheme, right quarterback, getting in the football. He's got a chance to be special in this league.
I keep hearing and I keep liking it the more I think about it. The athleticism compact of like someone like Drake London, right? When he was coming out of the draft and the Atlanta Falcons took him 8th overall. I think that's kind of where you'll see Tet go. I think he's going to be a top 10 pick. There's too many squads. The more I think about it, I know that people have really played up, you know, Mike Vrabel's comments about needing a big body receiver that they could take Tet at number 4. I don't think that's going to happen because I think that Abdul Carter will be sitting in their laps and they'll take him with the 4th overall selection. But past that, there's a couple teams that could potentially take Tet before the Saints. And that's my only worry, is that you know, he might not be there at pick nine. When we were talking with Des Johnson from the host of the Believe in Panthers podcast, he mentioned this, Mike, that with all the money the Panthers have spent, they could potentially be in the market to help Bryce Young and get a true X receiver in Tet McMillan with the eighth overall selection and maybe address defense later on in the draft because they've spent a lot of money on that side of the ball.
And they're going to be numbers on defense. See, that's the one thing that you and I have talked about off the air, where I think late in round one, early in round two, the run will be on offensive linemen. There aren't as many this year. And if some of those guys are there, they're going to be taken off quickly. Because supply and demand, if it's not as many, you better get them. Because you're not going to get that a little bit later. With defensive linemen, we may see some guys that we think are first-round pick people bleed into the second round.
Right.
Because I think teams say, you know what, I can get a defensive lineman a little closer to that guy in round two than in round one. I can't get that offensive lineman where I'm picking in the second round.
And that's why I wouldn't be mad with the Saints addressing offensive tackle with the ninth overall selection either, Mike. I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm never against drafting trenches. So if they decide to use the ninth overall selection on offensive line, defensive line, I wouldn't be mad. But, you know, going back to my conversation about Tet, yes, the Panthers could potentially pick him at pick eight. I could see the Jets maybe grabbing him. I mean, if the Jets, I've heard that they're kind of very interested in Tyler Warren from Penn State, the tight end. Because
I think they got a lot of teams interested in Tyler Warren.
They don't have a tight end, you know, on their roster that's
anywhere
close.
And remember, who spent more? Brock Bowers made the comment when he got picked by the Raiders. Who'd you spend the most time with? And he was quick with it.
Jets. Yeah.
That he thought that's where he might end up. Now, they needed offensive line help. I get that part.
And they got Olu.
Yeah. And so what happened, he sort of got bumped a little bit because of the fact it's the big man theory.
But the Jets are a team that's missing, you know, another pass catcher, right? Like, they have Garrett Wilson, but they could use Tyler Warren. They could also use Tet McMillan potentially with the seventh overall pick. The Raiders at pick six, I know we've kind of pinned them as taking Ashton Jeanty with the sixth overall selection, but I mean, their top receivers, Jacoby Myers, kind of goes back a little bit to the Chris Olave conversation, where he's a good wide receiver too, but is he really a wide receiver one? I mean, they could potentially invest in picking someone like Tet McMillan as well. So there's a couple spots ahead of the Saints that, you know, maybe McMillan makes sense and he may not be there by pick nine. But obviously, as we've talked about with his skill set, I think it would be a good fit.
Okay, how many people pick? Now, I had Penix as a first round pick. How many people had him in the top 10?
No, I mean,
none.
Yeah, it was a lot of people. I mean, how many people had six quarterbacks going in the top 12?
No, I had him in round one, but not in the top 12.
In the top 12.
Yeah, because I had Penix and Nix going a little bit later. But when you have that run, that's what kind of kicks a player down a little bit. And so it'll happen in this draft class also. When we come back, former LSU and Major League Baseball player Mikey Matuk will join us talking LSU baseball right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike to tell you, along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, former LSU and Major League Baseball player, host of Mic'd Up on YouTube, Mikey Matuk. Mikey, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Mikey, man, if you listen sometimes, I mean, you know, fans are fans. Man, it sounds like, you know, everything's coming down. Charlie and I talked about this midweek last week that, man, Texas, they are a really good baseball team. And I know one thing, that dude that's managing them, he knows what the hell he's doing out there. And they got a talented team. So, you know, you saw the first game say, oh, I got a couple texts. Oh, man, y'all praising Texas too much. Watch what LSU's going to do. And then all of a sudden, Mikey, it was like what could have went wrong. Your pitching sort of failed you. And, man, the fielding all across the board was not good and didn't get the timely hits like you had saw before, but it's early in the season. But, man, for some LSU fans, oh, my God, you'd swear, man, we got a Category 5 hurricane in the Gulf.
Yeah, you know, they look, that's what makes the fans so great, right? They're super passionate,
yes.
But they're not one to take a deep breath and not want to be rational in situations like this, and that's okay. You know, that's what we're here for, to kind of talk them down. But I do not think that, obviously, you know, going to Texas and losing the series is something to panic about. At the end of the day, LSU is still 4-2 in conference play. Texas is a top 5, top 10 team, depending on what polling you're looking at. And so it wasn't like they went on the road against a team that they were infinitely better than. They went on a road against a team that was very talented and very well coached and was playing at home. And so, you know, LSU played great, probably their most complete game of the year on Friday, and played well for half the game on Saturday. And then after that, the wheels kind of fell off, and Texas came roaring back. And then on Sunday, just felt like it was a little bit of a dead game. But I kind of give the credit to Texas on that, and making Chase Shores work really hard early in the game, and kind of having long innings in the bottom half and then short innings in the top half. And, you know, sometimes that baseball just works out that way. You know, there's a reason why you play the most games of any sport in baseball, because it's not a game that's decided between 1, 2, 10, even 20 games. It's decided over a long term of the year. You know, I think LSU still has a lot to obviously play for. But I think that, you know, fans, if you're watching, it's not something to be alarmed about. You know, it's just a bad weekend. It's a weekend that they're going to get better from. And I imagine you're going to see that tonight against UL.
Mikey, one of the things is, Bobby always says this, man, quarterbacks and head coaches, they get way too much credit when you win. They get way too much blame when you lose. And in baseball, the manager gets it too. Man, I've heard some of the dumbest things possible about Jay Johnson, about, you know, how things go. But, you know, your thoughts on Jay, just what I think he's done a phenomenal job here. Really has in a ever-changing world of college athletics and in college baseball, where we have seen the shift from out west to the south, where that's where most of the top teams are in the deep south, if it's in Texas, Oklahoma, and again, from the southeastern part, that, man, Jay, he gets it. He knows how to recruit, and he gets the very most out of his players.
Yeah, no, I think Jay's the perfect guy for the job here at LSU. I think, like you mentioned, all those, you know, those points of, you know, the landscape of college baseball and how recruiting is a year-to-year thing. And not only do you have to recruit players coming in, you have to recruit players in the portal, and you have to recruit your own players to stay. And so there's a lot of different dynamics in the recruiting world and the coaching world than there ever has been before. And I think he's a perfect guy for the job. I think he's been extremely successful, and everybody points to, oh, you won with Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz. Like, yeah, but you won. The most important part is he won. There's a lot of schools out there that have players that made it to the big leagues that are top 5 picks in the draft on the same team that didn't win, right? So just because you have the talent doesn't mean that you're just automatically going to win the game. I think baseball is the most obvious sport to see that in. And so I think, you know, he's the second most winningest coach in college. I don't even know if I said that right. In college baseball, behind Tony Vitello, and you know, you don't just do that based off of 1 year. You do that based off of the 4 years that he's been here. And you know, I still think this team that he's got right now is the deepest and most talented, probably top to bottom, from number 1 to number 40th on the roster. And I think he's doing a fantastic job. The SEC is harder than it's ever been before. The conference itself has more talented players. There's deeper teams. I mean, I think there's probably 11 or 12 teams, I guess, think ranked in the top 25 or have been ranked in the top 25 at some point this season. And so it's just an unprecedented league, and I think he's navigating it tremendously.
I don't know how much you've been able to watch with Mississippi State, but that's the next series after they play tonight, when they play the Raging Cajuns. Any insights on what you're expecting from Mississippi State this weekend?
Well, Mississippi State, LSU always has a rivalry built into it, you know, from Ron Polk and Skip Bertman days till now. And, you know, Mississippi State won the national championship, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, and they haven't been great since. I know they were ranked in the top 25 early in the season, and then they got into the SEC and they've gotten off to a bad start. But, you know, any SEC game, any team that has the ability and has the talent that they have, you know, to be ranked in the top 25 has the ability to beat any other team in the SEC. And so for me, it's a series you don't want to look past. It's also a series that you want to be able to be fundamentally sound. You don't want to walk guys. You don't want to make errors. You don't want to just give them unnecessary extra outs, because that's how those types of teams beat you. I think top to bottom, LSU is better talent-wise, but, you know, talent doesn't always prevail in baseball. And so I think that, you know, what I want to see for this weekend, I think the key for LSU to win this weekend is go out there and attack the strike zone, use the momentum that Anderson is going to give you on Friday because he's done it all year, and just continue to do that, whether it's the bullpen or the starters. And, you know, what happened last weekend was the bullpen. So if you come in, just I'd rather the team beat you with hits than you walk the guy. And so for me, that it's as simple as that. It's LSU not beating themselves more than Mississippi State beating them.
Yeah, Mikey, with the upcoming weekend series against Mississippi State, Mississippi State's off to a 1-5 start in SEC play, but, I mean, three of those losses came to Texas, and the other two losses came to Oklahoma. I mean, there's a top 10 teams for a reason. So it goes to your point about the SEC being a complete gauntlet. I want to get your thoughts on the offense. It's been so strong all season long. It really felt like that Sunday game, you know, give credit to Texas's pitching staff. That's what Jay did post-game. But it felt like an outlier more than anything else, where, you know, you have 11 strikeouts to basically two walks. It's been kind of the inverse all season long for this team. And it starts at the top, right? Derek Curiel has been awesome as the leadoff hitter for this team this year as a freshman. You know, he leads the team in walks with 24. He's just an on-base machine. He's tied for the top with Jared Jones hitting 420 this season. I want to get your evaluation of Derek Curiel and what you've seen from the young player so far.
Yeah, he's been extremely impressive. Obviously, comes in with a lot of hype. You know, he's a guy that didn't think they were going to get on campus, and they got on campus. And you felt like it was a stacked outfield, but, you know, he was going to have to earn his way onto the field. He's obviously done that. Day one starter from the beginning, top of the lineup from the beginning of the season. And I think what makes him so special, just from watching him, is he has a poise that's not normal for a freshman, right? He's very calm at the plate. He doesn't ever get too jumpy. He doesn't ever get out of what he's trying to do, and he's allowing the game to come to him, which is one of the hardest things to do in baseball. It took me, I don't know if I ever figured out how to do that, but he is very good at it, and that is a part of why he is able to accumulate the walks that he has and get on base like he has and be able to adjust to the pitchers throughout the course of the game, because everybody's going to make adjustments. And so his bat-to-ball skills are obviously uncanny, but it's the poise, it's the understanding of the strikes, the understanding of who he is as a hitter that's been so impressive to me.
And then I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball a little bit here, Mikey, before we let you run. With, you know, as far as Cade Anderson goes on Friday, he was basically the highlight of the weekend. He looked awesome against Texas in the Friday night start, and he's basically your ace for the rest of the season. They use Zach Cowan behind him. And Zach Cowan, yep. Jay's called the MVP of the team multiple times. He's been used in all these high leverage moments. He had the extended outing on Friday, so really wasn't able to get used the rest of the weekend. I mean, do you see that kind of being the plan for Fridays with Cade and then Zach and just kind of shutting down opposing offenses for that first game to kind of go up 1-0? Or, you know, with the bullpen struggles that you saw a little bit this past weekend, is Jay going to kind of see how it goes and maybe use Zach Cowan later on in the weekend, depending on high leverage moments, so to speak?
I think it's going to be a more of a case by case basis. I think that you can kind of look on how Jay used Griffin Herring last year. You know, he used him in situations like on Fridays where, hey, you're going to close the game out, you're going to throw four innings, and we're going to get out of here. Or use them in situations where you use them multiple times on a weekend or save them until Sunday. And the conversation throughout the course of that year was, when's Griffin Herring going to get a start? We don't have a Sunday guy that's proven themselves to be the guy. Why don't you give him a start? And Jay stayed true with what he wanted Griffin to be, and that's the stopper and the MVP of the bullpen type guy. And it feels like Zach Cowan's going to be the same type of role. I agree with his move of last week of getting the win on Friday. You know, it wasn't like the game was super away. It didn't get away from Texas until the very end. And you know, anytime you can go on the road on in the SEC and win a game, Friday game, you win it, and then you set yourself up for having an entire bullpen, which nobody could have predicted the bullpen kind of falling apart on Saturday like it did. I think you're going to see that role from Zach throughout the course of the year. You know, I think that if LSU ends up blowing out a team on Friday, you're probably not going to see him throw with a 7-8 run lead very consistently on Fridays, and you'll be able to save them for the weekends. But, you know, I think if the game's anywhere within 4 or 5 runs on Friday, you're probably going to see him first out the pen.
Mikey, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always great when you come on. But I got to tell you this story. I have a neighbor of mine, and, you know, we always talk, you know, we'll talk a little bit LSU baseball, and he always will bring up, yeah, Skip Bertman was great, but he could have won a couple more national championships. And I'm like, what? Dude, hey, I'm going to get the smelling salts so you can come back to the real world. But it goes to show you sometimes, man, people get kind of caught up in all that. And how much pressure was on Tennessee last year with Tony to win that national championship?
Finally break through.
And he finally was able to break through.
Right.
Man, you go through such a gauntlet to get to that point. And so it ain't as easy as you might think.
No, it's not. It's not easy. And it's you can have the most talented team, they don't always win. You have to have some luck and good fortune go your way. And you get spoiled when you see all the championships at Skip Point. It makes it look easy, and it's not easy. I can promise you that.
Thank you, Mikey. Appreciate it, bud.
Yep. Thank you all.
All righty. Mikey Mituk, man, played at LSU. Man, seems like almost yesterday. Now he's on Mic'd Up on YouTube. You can hear his thoughts on LSU baseball, basketball, football on YouTube at Mic'd Up. When we come back, Gary Smith, who covers the Tulane Green Wave, will be on with us to talk a little bit about their pro day today for the Green Wave right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike DeTeo along with Charlie Long and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, Gary Smith, who covers the Tulane Green Wave for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, and also publisher of thewavereport.com. Gary, each and every spring we got the pro day, and when I look at the Green Wave football team, the guys that have the best chance to get drafted, three in particular, Caleb Bransaw, versatility there, can play the outside corner, can play in the nickel. I think his best spot really may be free safety, to be honest with you. Mario Williams, a lot of that having to do with the hype coming out of high school, and he flashed it at times at Tulane. And then the guy I've gotten so many phone calls about over the last couple of weeks, Patrick Jenkins, defensive tackle, former John Eric guy, went to TCU and then comes back to Tulane. So your thoughts on those three players? Yeah. And if you think anybody, I think you'll have some free agent signings out of this, certainly. Yeah. But I think those three are the three guys with the very best chance to get selected.
I think you're probably right. I don't expect Mario Williams to get drafted. I think he's more likely going to be a camp guy. The other two I agree with. I would throw a couple of names in there as long shots. One, Aiden Huntington, who never really played great for Tulane last year, had a much better year at Louisiana Monroe as a junior, but he had a really good pro day today, and he has those measurables and the athletic ability that, you know, there's always the coach out there who may think we're the one that are going to get that potential out of him. And then another guy, Jonathan Edwards, cornerback, didn't even start for Tulane. He started two games this year. He is unbelievably fast on the football field. He has good times in the 40 and running too, but he made a play against Louisiana Lafayette that I'll never forget, where their running back was about 10 yards behind everybody, and he came from the far side of the field and ran him down inside the 5-yard line. He had a good pro day too. He's got those measurable, the speed that scouts like, but I think you're probably right. And I think really the only lock to get drafted is Caleb Bransaw, which is, you know, I don't think he had a great year for Tulane. He's very versatile. The coaches love him. They always talked him up big time, but this is a guy that had one career interception in college, and to me that's a bit of a red flag. But I think because he just killed it at the combine, he was the one Tulane player invited to the NFL combine, and he ran a 4.33 40. He had a huge vertical jump. He had a great standing long jump, and he's rated the third best player at his position in athleticism there. He graded lower on the other things like performance and stuff like that, but he, I think he's the one definite to get drafted.
He went to the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, he went to the Senior Bowl. Jonathan Edwards ended up going to the Senior Bowl, too. He was a late invitee. Caleb Bransaw, it seems to me the consensus is he'll probably be a fifth-round pick. If anybody else is drafted, and I agree with you that Patrick Jenkins has, I think he has the best shot of those other guys, I think it'll be a sixth or seventh round.
one of the things with Mario is the fact that, okay, and he gives you some problems because he can vertically challenge you, but he's vertically challenged too. He's not the tallest guy around.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And again, man, with all the hype when he came out of high mm-hmm. school, never quite living up to that. And mm-hmm. and so just like you were saying about, you know, the Edwards comp that, you mm-hmm. know, he didn't get only started two games. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm Dr. Phil. I can change Mario Williams too. And so you're going to get that in this league.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. I think the height is he doesn't have the measurables. He's fast. He's not super fast. He's fast, but that size is a concern when you don't have the incredible production. He had a terrific last four games for Tulane. That was the best he played, other than he obviously had a good sophomore year at USC, had the drops as a junior there. He does a lot better than people think in terms of the personality and the work ethic and all of that stuff. That's not a concern at all. A lot of people think because he was such a hyped guy coming out of high school, played for three schools in college, played at USC, left USC, that he's a head case, and that's not the case at all. I just don't know if there's enough consistent performance there for him to get drafted considering his size.
I'm going to throw maybe the curveball at you. From what you've mm-hmm. seen at the quarterback position, and all three are sure. different. We had on mm-hmm. Coach Sumrall, and I was like, man, I said, you used to reading the name tags? And he said, Mike, let me tell you what we did. We got him these workout little pullover shirts, and they would have the name on the back and the front. So he said, that's how I got to learn how the names of the players, because we had so much turnover. But what you've mm-hmm. seen at the quarterback position, because all three are distinctly different, who would have the edge today if you had to play a game?
If I had to play a game, I honestly have no idea who would have the edge, and I'm dead serious on that. You want to talk about a wide, wide, wide open competition, and this is it. And you're right. You want to talk about three different body types. You've got 6'7", huge arm. You've got 5'11", not a huge arm, but accurate thrower. And then you got Mr. Middle from Illinois, who's 6'3", and kind of combines both. So it's never hard to figure out which one it is.
well, those he knew the difference. It's some of the other guys. But, and with so much changeover, Gary, mm-hmm. and you can hear it in Coach Sumrall's voice, that he said, I've never had this much turnover on a football team before. You can see that, you know, he understands that this is going to take quite an undertaking to piece all this together for 2025.
Yeah. Look, if you really forced me to say right now, I think I would go with the little guy, Caden Simonza of the three from Ball State, because I think he's the most accurate and I think he makes the best decisions. But remember, at this time last year, I was one of the Darian Mensa skeptics. I didn't think that there was any way that they were going to go with a guy who had no experience whatsoever over two guys that did. And then it turned out to be a pretty easy choice for them.
Yeah, it worked out well, didn't it?
So I don't trust myself and my opinions anymore on a lot of this stuff.
Hey, listen, I know the feeling, Gary. I know that. Gary, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate time and all your insights, and we'll have you on once we get a little bit farther into the spring.
Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Gary Smith does a fabulous job covering Tulane. It doesn't matter if it's baseball, basketball, football. Does a great job as the chief beat writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate for the Tulane Green Wave. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number two right after this break on the Big 870. WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Last week, New York Giants signed Jameis Winston, 2-year contract. About a half an hour ago, they signed Russell Wilson to a 1-year deal with the Giants. So we'll see what happens there. I think they're still looking for a quarterback, because if you're looking for the future,
definitely a long-term option.
It's not going to be either one of those two guys. We have more Sports Talk and LSU baseball right after this news break.